Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hello, everyone. We're in the United Foods of America, and we are in Pennsylvania. And I'm here with Kaylee.
Hi.
Yeah, my lovely wife.
Hi, what's up? How's it going?
Not much. We're hanging out in Pennsylvania. What do you know about Pennsylvania?
Not a lot. I know it's next to New York, so a lot of people like live in Pennsylvania and then go to New York for work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I know Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two places in Pennsylvania. Amish. Quite a few Amish people live in Pennsylvania. The office was set in Pennsylvania. Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That's about all I know.
Yeah. All those things. Same here.
There's also a city called King of Prussia. Which I've always thought is so weird.
Yeah.
Like that, I don't know, that's just a weird city name to me.
That is.
But that's all I know.
Huh. Yeah. Anyway. but yeah, no, same thing except the King of Prussia. I didn't know that. But yeah, same thing, new of those things in Pennsylvania. I think the only other like quirky fact that I know is that Biscuit likes attacking my microphone up on our desk. Anyway, that Philadelphia, the way that they did the city planning, I believe it's Philadelphia. It's like very grid-like.
Mm.
It's very structured and grid-like. And so people have like commented about how like, oh, what was it? The Quakers, right? Like, they did it, and then Benjamin Franklin helped do it or something. And I'm like, listen, you guys were going to be the capital. We get it. Just
stop showing off.
Yeah. You're very historical. We understand.
Isn't Philadelphia a pretty good place to live?
Yeah. I mean, they're like the worst sports fans ever. but I think people like living there. It's the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, it's got like a lot of, you know, museums and different cuisines and stuff.
Right.
So I know that adds to the charm.
Yeah. Philadelphia Eagles, they played a Christmas Day game and they booed and threw trash at Santa. I remember that.
Who did? The team or the...
No, the fans. The Philadelphia Eagles fans. They saw Santa and they booed him and threw trash at him.
I kind of respect that.
Yeah, that was kind of legit. Yeah, but...
They are fearless.
Yeah, plus it is the home of It's Always Sunny in
Philadelphia. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, gotta love it. We're going to be talking about their food.
Woohoo.
Yeah, tasteatlas.com, most popular foods in Pennsylvania. First on the list here... Shoe fly pie.
Oh.
I have heard of this pie. I've never had it.
I have not.
This
is like one of those weird Midwestern phrases that you just say.
Kinda.
And I'm like, what is that?
Right.
That can't be a thing. And you're like, it's a pie. You say it like this. And I'm like, I've never heard of that.
Right.
This is one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. It's a specialty of southeastern Pennsylvania. It's a gooey dark pie, and it's an interesting combination of a rich filling made with molasses, brown sugar, butter, and a crunchy, crumbly topping. There are two theories to its origin. One says that the filling was so sweet that flies had to be shooed away as it was left to cool down, and the other theory says that it was inspired by shoe fly molasses, a product that was popular in Pennsylvania in the 1800s, when pies by that name first appeared. Regardless of its origins, shoe fly pie is extremely similar to the sweet British treacle tart, made since medieval days in Europe. In Pennsylvania and Dutch country, populated by Mennonites, Moravians, and Amish, the pie was a staple dessert in the wintertime when fruit supplies were scarce and the expensive eggs were better off in other dishes. Shoofly pie was traditionally consumed for breakfast as a nourishing food that gave one enough energy to last until lunchtime. Today, it's almost always a dessert, a sweet treat, and a great example of regional American food. Yeah. And then you have apple dumpling.
That looks good.
Yeah. I like apple dumplings. Apple dumplings is an American dessert consisting of a dumpling filled with apples, butter, sugar, cinnamon, and sometimes raisins. I don't like the ones with raisins. But I like raisins. I just think that if you're going with apple, like, don't throw raisins in there.
I kind of feel like raisins are best on their own.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I know.
Or covered in chocolate.
Or in trail mix.
Yeah.
But not, like, in a meal.
It's okay in bread pudding. Okay. Like, if it doesn't have it in it, I don't miss it.
Yeah.
You know? Anyways, the dish is traditionally baked until it develops a tender texture, and it is often served with a scoop of vanilla ice cream on the side. It's believed that apple dumplings were invented by the pilgrims who brought the recipes for fruit dumplings over to America. Today, the dessert is especially popular in the Pennsylvania region. Yeah.
So it's kind of like cobbler.
Yeah. Like cobbler. It's like... It's kind of like a served for one.
The dumpling thing is not, like apple dumpling is not a dessert out here.
Right.
But yeah, the filling is the same, but it's in pie or cobbler.
Yeah.
Or tart, not
a
dumpling.
Yeah. And then next up here on the Taste Atlas, you got roast pork sandwich. Yeah, roast pork sandwiches are a staple in numerous sandwich shops throughout Philadelphia. The bread roll is typically topped with sesame seeds and loaded with a generous spoonful of pork juices. That is a great sentence. It is then stuffed with either sliced pork roast pork chunks, or pulled pork along with broccoli rabe or spinach and melted cheese such as provolone. The condiments are optional, and every customer can choose some of them according to personal preferences. These succulent sandwiches are popular in Philadelphia due to their simplicity and a nice balance of flavors. Yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, it'd be good with, like, peppers and tomato.
Yeah, the pork industry was like, hey, you can't just have the Philly cheesesteak. We got to get our sandwich in here. Yeah, the next one here, very popular in New Hampshire, and the creation in Maine, whoopie pies. You got the whoopie pie. Despite its name, whoopie pie is actually an enlarged cookie sandwich consisting of two soft chocolate cake cookies with a sweet and fluffy white filling. It is believed that whoopie pie has a Pennsylvania Amish origin. I swear to God. They have said, I've heard three different origins of the whoopie pie at this point. I've heard there was something in New Hampshire about the whoopie pie, and then it was like, no, we just like it a lot. We think Maine made it, and then Maine's like, yep, we have whoopie pie festivals. We made the whoopie pie, and now it's the Pennsylvania Amish.
Yeah, cash grab.
Yeah.
They want the fame.
Right.
They want the 15 minutes, so.
And it says here, although today it is extremely popular throughout New England, especially in Maine, according to the Amish, those people who don't use technology, when children would find this sweet treat in their lunch bags, they used to shout, whoopee, hence the name.
I'm not going to lie, that's one of my least favorite words.
Yeah.
I hate it. Like, like when you watch, 70s game shows, like The Newlywed, and they say that word for a, to mean another.
Yeah. Bedroom thing.
Yeah, wink. I like cringe. Yeah. It's like people don't like the word moist. Mm-hmm. I don't like whoopee. Oh, I can't even.
You don't like whoopee pie?
No, that's such a weird word. Man.
I tell you,
But I mean, the dessert looks absolutely incredible.
I've had a couple whoopie pies in my day.
I don't think I've ever had one, and it's a shame because this is calling my name.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Cake with little frosting in the middle? Hello. Mm-hmm. It's like a softer Oreo.
It almost makes you want to say, whoopee.
Shut up.
Anyway.
I'm banning that word from this household.
The next one here in Pennsylvania, one of my favorites. Oh my gosh, I love this stuff. Funnel cake. A quintessential part of every American street fair is the crispy funnel cake. The unique name is derived from the method of preparation in which the batter made with egg, sugar, milk, and baking soda is poured through a funnel directly into sizzling oil. It falls in circular, thin, and tangled streams, creating the distinctive shape of the American delicacy. When fried, the batter expands, and the final result is a crispy golden brown treat. In the modern history of the United States, funnel cake is traditionally associated with the Pennsylvania Dutch, the German-speaking immigrants who inhabited the area in the 17th and 18th century. Desserts which closely resemble the American funnel cake are also found in numerous European countries, such as Germany and Finland. Hmm. And a similar recipe has been discovered in the old Anglo-Norman cookbook dating back to the 14th century. Although the actual origin of funnel cake is unknown, in America, it was made famous in the 1950s at the annual folk festivals, which promoted the tradition and folklore of the Pennsylvanian Dutch. Since then, funnel cakes have been a staple of many sporting events, fairs, festivals, and carnivals. Funnel cakes are always freshly prepared and served hot. They are usually enjoyed dusted with powdered sugar. But other favorite condiments also include fresh fruit, jams, chocolate, whipped cream, caramel candy, and many other innovative combinations.
I've only had funnel cake a couple times, but yeah. I prefer it with fruit. Yeah. Like a fruit. There was one time I had it with like a strawberry glaze, mm-hmm. and that was super good.
Yeah.
And I think that's much better having it that way instead of just the funnel cake and then like the powdered sugar. Because I feel like that's too much sweet, but at least you have some fruit to cut it.
Yeah, balance it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to get on my little story box here.
Here we go.
So funnel cake, another dessert that absolutely hates me because it has powdered sugar and it gets all over me. Especially
hates being messy.
I do.
He can't
and I have
eat
a beard.
Messy foods.
Yeah, I have a beard. And so powdered sugar, I love it, but it gets all over me. And I just look like a typical, stereotypical chubby dude. Everybody's like, he's got powdered sugar on him. Actually, they're just walking by. They don't even notice me. But I think in my head, that's what they're thinking.
It's called anxiety, babe.
I know. Yeah. And they're like, oh, look at the fat guy with, of course he did. I bet he ate little donuts. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it's a funnel cake. I was having a good time. And but no, I mean, my thing is, there was a place in Ozark. Technically, it was in between Ozark and Nixa, I think. And it was called the Hay Swings. And I think I tried to show you one time what they were.
It looks like one of the most dangerous things you could ever do.
It was so fun.
But that doesn't mean it's not dangerous.
So, yeah, you'd get on top of hay bales, either that or just a really high spot in a warehouse. And you got on, they called it hay swings because, like, there was hay bales everywhere.
Listen, he said there's a warehouse. Your alarm should be going off right now.
They would put these anchors up in the ceiling or on beams, and you would get on, it had rope, but then it would split. And when it split, there was, like, this band kind of thing, and you'd put it, like, under your butt, like, around your hip. And you would run and jump off the edge of this hay swing and you'd spin in a circle. When I describe it, it sounds just really stupid. And why are you doing this at a high altitude? But it was the funnest thing ever. And when you were in junior high, that was like where everybody went to make out. Like you. Aww. Yeah. Like that's where you met your supposed future girlfriend was there, or your future boyfriend for the ladies out there. For me, that was the place that I was like, I'm going to do the Superman off of the big one that's outside because it had a metal frame kind of thing. And then also I was going to get one package of what do they call those? Basically the candy that's like a straw and it has all the sugar on it. Well, they're like pucker straws or something like that. Sour punch straws. Anyways, I would always get one package of those either in green apple or in cherry. And then I would always get a funnel cake. Oh my gosh. They had funnel cakes at this place. And everybody loved the funnel cakes. It reeked of funnel cakes everywhere.
Yeah.
And you'd go on the hay swing. You'd swing by where the concessions were. And it was like, funnel cake, back to hay. Funnel cake, back to hay. And yeah. A typical Southwest Missouri kid, that's where you went. And yeah, everybody's like, oh, I hope, you know, I hope Samantha or Taylor is there today. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, I'm getting me some funnel cake. Like, I was so pumped and jazzed to do Superman off of, I think they called it like the Beast or something like that.
How old were you?
It was between the ages of like 6 or 7 years old up until I was like 13 or 14.
Okay.
That was like the cool time to go. Was in that time period. After that, it was kind of like, I can't ride half of these because I'm already like over the weight line. Like, I'm an adult. Like, yeah. I can't do this. Yeah. But anyway, that's my little story of funnel cakes. That's where I remember that. And then, of course, every time there was a fair, there were funnel cakes, corn dogs, you know, your typical American
fried butter
favorites. Yeah. Fried butter, fried Oreos.
Yeah.
Man,
Snickers.
Snickers. Yeah. But anyways, Pennsylvania, known for their ice cream floats.
Yes.
An ice cream float is a beverage consisting of ice cream. Everybody knows what a freak an ice cream float is. I don't need to read this. Yeah, it's your favorite soda with vanilla ice cream put in it. It does say here, okay, hold on. It was invented in Philadelphia by Robert Green, a soda shop operator who ran out of cream and decided to use ice cream instead of it. So instead of like, what is it, an Italian soda? Right?
Yeah.
Shortly after, his daily earnings soared from $6 to $600.
Bringing it in.
Yeah, the popularity of ice cream floats. It is no wonder that there are numerous variations such as chocolate ice cream soda, cake floats,
cake
or Coke.
Float?
Coke. Oh. Coke floats. Sorry, everybody. Purple Cow, Butterbeer, and Boston
Purple
Cooler.
Purple Cow?
I've never heard of that. What is a Purple Cow?
I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, now it's enjoyed in diners.
A root beer float is like chef's kiss in the summer.
Oh, it's so good.
I will never be old enough for a root beer float.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And then the sandwiches here, I've got like 5 pictures of them.
Yeah, there was a lot.
Yeah, for a hoagie.
Okay, gotta have a hoagie rolls,
yeah,
the best for sandwiches.
Oh,
just saying.
Totally. A hoagie has been declared the official sandwich of Philadelphia in 1992, consisting of an Italian roll that is sprinkled with oil and vinegar, then layered with onions, tomatoes, shredded lettuce, provolone cheese, and different types of meat according to a customer's preference. Yeah. It does say here there are many theories about its origin, but one that most likely involves a jazz musician turned sandwich shop owner called Al De Palma. In the 1920s, he saw people eating a sub and said, you had to be a hog to eat such a large sandwich. During the Great Depression, he opened a sub shop and called his large sandwiches hoggies, which became hoagies over time. Because nobody liked to be called a hoggie.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, the next one here. Stromboli.
Oh, boy.
I love Stromboli. It's so good. It's similar to a calzone. The American Stromboli is a savory type of turnover filled with classic pizza ingredients. So mozzarella, cheese, Italian meats like salami, pepperoni, bresaola, and capicolo, and then sometimes even vegetables.
we're looking at right now is no vegetables.
There's no vegetables. The marinara sauce is served on the side rather than baked inside with the filling. And then you cut it into little strips and you dip it in. And you can see there's meatballs in there. Dip it in. And then, of course, the next one here, cheesesteak.
Of course.
I think that's like the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's a cheesesteak. The Philadelphian icon, known as a Philly cheesesteak, is an extremely popular sandwich consisting of thinly sliced pieces of steak and tender melting cheese and a long and crusty hoagie roll. It was invented in the 1930s in what is now a Philadelphian institution called Pat's King of Steaks. Pat's started as a regular hot dog stand in South Philadelphia, and one day, Pat had decided to make himself a sandwich consisting of thinly sliced ribeye steak and cooked onions placed into an Italian roll. And then history was made. Not really. It was a hungry cab driver. Stopped by and smelled beef, and he forgot about the hot dogs, and a Philly steak sandwich was born. See, it's always a cab driver, a bicycle delivery person, a businessman, a bank owner, and they run in and they're like, give me more of this food now! And then they just grab it.
Is that how they sound?
Yeah, that's what they always make it out to be.
You know, I feel like things were so much easier back in the day.
Yeah.
It's like someone walks in and then the whole world changes.
Well, yeah. Same with this Philly cheesesteak thing. Like, hey, let's grab a ribeye steak, some onions and cheese and put it together. And it was like, oh my God, everybody, we love it. And it's like, now we look back at that and we're like, that should have been a thing so much earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, why? You're telling me nobody did that before then? Like, yeah. But that's the world in a nutshell, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, some claim that the cheese ideally should be Cheese Whiz or provolone, but was added by Pat's friendly rivalry, Joey Vento, the owner of Gino's Steaks, located across the street from Pat's joint.
Direct competition.
Yep, direct competition. I like it with sautéed mushrooms and with the sweet peppers. My personal favorite type of Philly cheesesteak, you got to go provolone. Mm-hmm. I love Cheese Whiz, but provolone. And then you do mushrooms, peppers, onions, and then sweet peppers. Mm. And maybe some hot sauce. And then that's it.
You know, I know it's not like authentic or the real deal, but chicken cheesesteaks?
Yeah.
Those are pretty good.
They're not bad. Yeah. Yeah. Not There's, very inauthentic, but still delicious.
I know.
But still very good.
That, what's it called? Like Charlie's cheese.
And then
steaks.
Charlie's. Yeah. Charlie's cheesesteaks.
Yeah. That one chain. Yeah. I haven't had an authentic cheesesteak, but I've had those and they're pretty good.
Yeah. And then the next one here, you got banana split. Yeah, that's right. Banana split's another story. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
I worked at Brahms, another Southwest Missouri institution from Kansas and Oklahoma. I know how to make an authentic banana split. It is very easy when you are working at an ice cream place to do this. And then people would all the time be like, well, you work at Brahms. You know how to make. And I'm like, oh, man, I hate all of you. Like, because to have all this stuff in your house to make a banana split, it's intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have strawberry, vanilla, and chocolate ice cream. Not Neapolitan. You can't do Neapolitan. You got to have
full scoops.
Yes, yeah, full scoops. You cut the banana in half. You throw in almonds, which a lot of people are like, oh, do peanuts. And it's like, you can do peanuts, but then you're not authentic anymore. So you're supposed to do chopped almonds and then whipped cream, a cherry on top, Big Willie style banana split. That's what you go with.
They're pretty good.
And I had to put them in a little to-go box and scurry people through a drive-through and Brahms. I don't know how many times I'd hear through that loudspeaker, I want a banana split. It was always a kid. And I understand why, because it's like magical looking. Like, look at it. Like, it's just amazing. But inevitably, it was always like a dad and four screaming kids in this car. And every single one of them, they're like, well, what do you want, kids? And they'd be like, banana split. It was just like, oh my God. We're like, how many? And he'd be like, well, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 kids in the car and then me. So 5, please. And we're like, oh, we don't need this. We really don't need
Hey,
this.
Maybe something good happened to them.
Oh, no.
Like,
yeah. They're having a good.
Something.
Right.
Or
yeah.
Maybe something bad happened.
And I don't think anything bad happened.
And
I think it was a good thing.
And they just wanted to celebrate the banana split.
I know.
Jeez.
I know. Like I said, it was probably like a family memory they hold so close to the chest.
No.
I did my job. I did my job. Okay. I made the banana splits. But there, I think it was more like they're having fun and happiness. And they're like, yay. and then we've got like a full lobby. Our grill is going like crazy. Right. And you're just sitting there like, I wish I was in a car with my dad getting a banana split.
Was,
I think that's what went through your head. It wasn't like, oh, I hate these kids or anything. No, I mean, they're just kids. I mean, look at it. It's amazing. But at the same time, yeah, you're like this teenager that's like, oh, the world's crushing me now. And then everybody's like, banana split. Like, yeah, The Bear, if anybody's watched that. Yeah, that went through my head a couple times of just people screaming through a loud mic or like a manager breathing down your neck. Like, hey, we've got like 5 or 4 chocolate shakes that we need to have out and make sure 2 of them have malt. Also provide me straws and you need to refill the napkins. Thanks. Bye. Yeah, that happened all the time. It was insane. What do you like about banana splits?
I was just letting you have your therapy session.
I know.
What do I like about them?
Yeah, have you ever had one?
Duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duh.
I love them. They're really good.
They are very good. They're very decadent just because of like all the toppings and stuff on it. But they are super, super good. I don't even know the last time I had one. I don't know. I guess my favorite part is just the different flavors of ice cream.
Right. Kind of going down the line.
I like that it's not just all vanilla or all chocolate or something. It's strawberry, vanilla, and chocolate. Yeah. So you get all these flavors with the banana and the syrup and the whipped cream and all that stuff. So, yeah.
I was trying to get a bug. Sorry.
Yeah. Summertime brings bugs, and I know. It's disgusting.
It is. Anyways, I do too. And what's interesting is when you get down towards the end, there's like a mix of all of it. Mm-hmm. So there's like hot fudge, strawberry, chocolate, vanilla. It's really, really good.
Yep.
I was a fan of doing this, though. My last thing on banana splits. Whenever I would make it for myself, I wouldn't cut the banana down the middle. I know people like the boat shape, right? Mm-hmm. I would chop it into coins and line the whole dish with the coins of the banana.
Oh.
That was kind of my move. And people were like, that's not a banana split because you didn't split the banana. And I'm like, I'm an adult. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm eating ice cream. Leave me alone.
You still have a banana in it, so
I know.
I don't know why they're sticklers.
I know, and I wasn't sitting there going, "I'm making a banana split." That was. I was just like, "I'm gonna make this dessert." Like that music was playing.
I'm sure it was. I think that's just your daily background music.
It is. It is. It's from a Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Next thing here from Taste Atlas, it's actually the last thing, Pittsburgh pierogies. Mm. You have not had a pierogi yet, have you?
No, I've had a kolache.
Yeah, kolache.
That was really good, but I felt like super, I don't want to say sick, because I wasn't sick, but like my tummy hurt.
Yeah, it's rich.
Yeah.
Very rich.
So these kind of look the same.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, but they're potatoes. They're pierogies.
I love potatoes.
Yeah. Originally brought to the Pennsylvanian region by immigrants from Eastern Europe, pierogies have become a unique staple dish, both in the city of Pittsburgh and all over Western Pennsylvania. Pierogies are soft, semicircle dumplings that are traditionally filled with potatoes or cheese, but the number of fillings is virtually countless and limited only by imagination. In Poland, pierogies have been made since the 13th century, and they had been brought to the U.S. during the late 19th and early 20th century when Pittsburgh experienced a population boom during the Great Migration. As pierogies are inexpensive and portable, they were a common meal in the lunchboxes of numerous mill workers during the Industrial Age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love a potato and cheese pierogi. My mom bought some. They were frozen, I think. And she's like, have you ever had a pierogi? And I was like, no, I haven't. And she made some one night. I think it was after like a baseball game or something. And I remember thinking, like, these are just like little miniature, like, they're basically, what would you call it? Like American comfort food raviolis. That's what I thought in my head. Because the ones that we got, there were two different kinds. It was broccoli and cheese and then potato and cheese.
Mm.
And I just thought, yeah, this is like Americanized raviolis, but the raviolis are huge. And that's what they were. You know, the pierogies were pretty big. You can fry them. You can boil them. You can steam them. Some folks even try to grill them a little bit. It just depends on what you do. But yeah, love me a good pierogi. They're good. A lot of people stuff them with like Asian ingredients. That's what I've seen recently.
I could see that.
Yeah. Then you got pretzels. This is from Food Network. You got pretzels. Southeastern Pennsylvania is home to Snyder's of Hanover. So no duh. They're big on the pretzels. They have a lot of Pennsylvania Dutch, people from Germany, Martin's Pretzels in Akron, and hope for one of fresh from the oven. So they got big, chewy pretzels and regular, like crunchy pretzels.
There's nothing like a soft pretzel with a cheese dip. And I know it's not nutritional at all.
But it's very good.
It tastes so good.
Yeah, super
good. And it's got to have that thick salt. Thick salt so you can just just crunch it against your teeth, and it's so good.
It just goes.
It breaks your teeth. It's incredible.
Oh, man. Then you got Old Forge style pizza. So basically school lunch pizza. Yeah. It's northeastern Pennsylvania. A whole pizza is a tray, not a pie, and serving is a cut, not a slice. And it's packed up to go in shirt boxes, since Old Forge style pizza predates pizza boxes. It's fiercely beloved by locals. Staggering number of pizza shops in the area should be proof enough. Options are red for a sturdy crust topped with sauce, diced onions, and cheese, and white, which is often double crusted, stuffed with cheese, and topped with herbs and black pepper. Then you got tomato pie, which is in the Old Forge style. You got the pizza-ish snack is essentially crust with a smear of red sauce and a dusting of cheese. That's Kaylee pizza.
Yeah, I was about to say, honestly, this looks so good.
Yeah, there's a plethora of old Italian bakeries in South Philly, including Caccia's, Franco Luigi's, and Sarcone's that serve it at room temperature by the slice. If you want to try new school adaptation, go to Square Pie, where the pizza dough gets 72 hours for a ferment. Yeah, served piping hot, topped with olive oil and grated grana padano. Yeah. You won't find tomato pie on the menu. It's by request only. Yeah. That's a Kaylee pizza.
Yep.
Yep.
I would like to try.
Yeah. Then you got Scrapple. I've had Scrapple. It's odd. It's kind of a spammy type of food. Yeah. Scrapple is the traditional breakfast meat of Pennsylvania, developed to minimize food waste. It's made with pork trimmings left over from butchering, mixed with cornmeal, formed into a block-shaped loaf, then sliced and fried. It's got Sulamae's, a homey diner near Kensington, serves Eggs Benzington. Sorry, that's a good name. And a Pennsylvania for Sunny Side Up is Dippy Eggs. So order it with Dippy Eggs. Then you got Wedding Soup. So a traditional Italian immigrants had a strong influence in Pittsburgh. So they went there and made Wedding Soup. You love Wedding Soup.
I haven't had it.
Really?
No.
Oh, it's Acini di Pepe.
I haven't had it, actually.
Yeah.
No, because it has meatballs in it, and I haven't had a soup with
meatballs in it. Oh, with the meatballs in it.
I love minestrone.
I know you like minestrone. There's some other thinner broth soup that you liked, and it wasn't minestrone, because minestrone is kind of beefy.
It's tomato-y.
Yeah.
Chunky.
Yeah. I'll think of it.
Okay.
One day. The next one here, birch beer. Like an herbier and slightly minty cousin to root beer, birch beer in creamy red, brown, and clear options. It's a Pennsylvania Dutch country specialty. It's made with the sap of birch trees.
Huh.
Yeah. Then you got Tasty Cakes. I've heard of Tasty Cakes. Never had them. Yeah.
No, I think we have. They sell them at Jersey Mike's. We tried them once. Oh,
they do. Yeah.
Because I had wanted to try some for so long because I'd seen them on like TV or whatever. And I was like, those look incredible. And then I tried it and I'm like, But maybe it was just that flavor, so.
Yeah, because there is a variety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Philadelphia's reenactment of the storming of the Bastille. Let them eat tasty cakes. At hockey games, the first Flyers player to score a goal gets a case donated to a charity of his choice. Aw.
That's nice.
Yeah, and he scores for a case of tasty cakes. That's pretty good. Then you got burnt almond tort.
There's a lot of food.
There is. There's a lot of Pennsylvania. It's historical. It's one of the 13 colonies. It's got quite a bit. You got Wilbur's chocolate here. And then you have a mushroom strudel. Yeah. Mushroom strudel.
My knee popped. Yeah. Sorry if you heard that.
But the mushroom strudel, that, oh man, I want one so bad. It's from Kennett Square, Hank's Place. It's known for its mushroom strudel. They cook cremini, shiitake, portobello, and white mushrooms in a rich sauce with cream, cheese, and savory bits of ham and dried beef.
That's a you dish.
That is a me dish. It has neat phyllo package, red beet eggs, and ring bologna. Yeah. So it's Black Forest Brewery. They make that. You got your red beet eggs, which are hard-boiled eggs, pickled with vinegar, sugar, spices, and beets. And then a Black Forest beer. Snapper soup, which is exactly what it sounds like. Not really. It's made with snapping turtle meat. That's right. So stew-like snapper soup, yeah, actual snapping turtle meat. It's been on the menu at Oyster House, a family-run Philadelphia institution since the 1970s. They boil whole turtles, shell and all, to make the rich stock and add simple mirepoix, allspice, and cloves for their warming version of a classic. Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Snapping turtle. They're like, you know what? Enough biting my toes. To throw you in like a lobster.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, Philly Surf and Turf. It's just a hot dog, a local Italian bakery. They top it with a pepper hash, cabbage, pepper, and vinegar slaw. But it is, yeah, it's got both. Basically, it is, yeah, this awesome surf and turf combo. It's got a fried fish cake and a beef hot dog.
Yeah. All right.
Pretty awesome. And then you got the Pittsburgher. Get it? Pittsburgh. Pittsburgher.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I get it.
Yeah.
Even though I'm tired, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, PA, whether you're from Scranton, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, food icons everywhere. Lots of big food. You gonna go to Pennsylvania?
I'd like to one day.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot there that I had no idea was there.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool. A lot of this stuff is like from, you know, immigrants that settled in that area.
Yeah.
You know, was it Pennsylvanian Dutch and German and Polish and Irish and Italian and just all sorts of cuisines. So
yeah,
it's cool. I'd like to be there one day.
Yeah.
Try it all.
It was the melting pot.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania steel melting pot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we will see everybody next time on United Foods of America in Kansas.
Ooh.
Yeah, the sunflower state.
Ooh.
Yeah. Good old Kansas. Everybody thinks it's super flat, but is there food? We'll see it next time.
I'd hope so.
In United Foods of America. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.